Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, American Airlines in a weak moment says it will give flyers back a seat inch. And it turns out United Airlines has been adding seats to their planes for over a year. We have an update on the crowded conditions in the sky.
1967 will always be known as the summer of love. And today, we dedicate our program to looking back at some of the memories. Many from the summer of love ultimately ended up in Santa Cruz. And we're going to take you to the Dream Inn on the Boardwalk at 3:20.
And at 3:35, we're joined in studio by Steve LaRosa. Steve and Tom will take you down memory lane with stories of Santana, Jefferson Airplane, and Bill Graham's concerts at the Fillmore.
The summer of love is in full swing in San Francisco. Come along with us as we share memories and tell you how that you can celebrate in San Francisco and even right here in Rancho Cordova.
Travel is about learning and having fun. Today, we'll tell you a little bit about a crazy time 50 years ago right here in Northern California. Welcome to the Summer of Love edition of The Travel Guys.
Got a black magic woman.
Come on, baby, light my fire.
Say you want a revolution. Well,
keep trucking. Got my chips cashed in. Keep trucking.
Stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Well, a happy Father's Day to all of our dads tuned in. This is The Travel Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano were brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. So thank you for taking time out of your day, and you regular listeners. And if you happen to be stumbling across The Travel Guys for the first time, well, welcome to the program. Mark, how have you been?
I've been very good, sir. It's been a good week. And weather is getting warmer, though. So much for a little rain and a little respite from summer. I think now we're pretty much screwed for between here and Labor Day. But welcome to summertime in Sacramento, and welcome to a very special program. Not only is it Father's Day, and happy Father's Day to everyone who's a dad or whoever acts like one out there who's listening to our program. We are having our special Summer of Love program today. So if you've got a few years under your belt and you are old enough to remember 1967 and you were either in San Francisco or at least in Northern California, we have a real treat for you later on here. We are going to take you down memory lane, I promise. And we're going to tell you how you can be a part of the Summer of Love in San Francisco and right here in Sacramento. So we have a great program for you today.
You know, we're going to feature a lot of music that was part of the 60s throughout the show. And I have to say, Mark, I know you did, too. We spent a little bit of extra time on this show today, and I did because I got drawn into listening to these songs that I hadn't been listening to in a long time, and one just kind of led to the other, and, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours later, I started picking the songs we really wanted to use, but I got sidetracked. That's
well,
for sure.
I'm kind of hoping that some of our listeners, by the time this hour is over, will perhaps have a little bit of a flashback on their own. And maybe if you are too young to remember the Summer of Love, if you weren't around in 1967, perhaps we will be able to help you understand a little bit of what made the Haight-Ashbury district in San Francisco kind of the center of the universe for a crazy and wild summer, the Summer of Love.
Well, okay, we are the Travel Guys, and as we always do at the top of every Travel Guys radio show, we bring you up to date on the travel news. All right, and with that being said, Mark, what do you got for us here on this Father's Day?
Well, let's see here. From our headlines here, we're talking about seats on aircraft. Remember a couple weeks ago we talked about American Airlines was going to cut the pitch in some of the seats on some of their new planes to 29 inches. Which is really, really tight. They have backed off a little bit now and said that, well, they will make sure the minimum seat pitch is 30 inches instead of 29. So American has given you back 1 inch on seats, which every inch matters. But what perhaps is even more interesting is that United Airlines, speaking at an investor presentation on Tuesday, their chief financial officer said United has been adding seats on nearly all of its 743 mainline aircraft. He says it's a very profitable way to grow. It's not a very significant investment, and it drives better margins. Quote, for many of our customers, despite what they say, they care most about pricing and schedules. According to a flight displayed, United has increased the number of seats on its Airbus 319s by 8, and on the Airbus 320s, the count has gone up by 12 seats. The financial officer didn't discuss pitch or the distance between seats. However, speaking at a Senate hearing last month, Sally Greenberg, who is the executive director of the National Consumer League, said average pitch has declined to 31 inches from 35 before deregulation. Quote, Americans are getting bigger, we're getting heavier, and we're being crammed into smaller and smaller spaces. The airlines, of course, say, well, the seats are thinner and less comfortable, so you'll feel like you have. All right, in the never-ending story of Uber and their carryings on, here comes a headline that says Uber should ban employee booze and drug use during core work hours. You may have heard about this. The former attorney general did a study for Uber and came up with 47 ways that they could improve their workplace culture. And believe it or not, the suggestion was that they ban drug use at work-related events and curb, quote, the amount of alcohol available in the office. Can you believe that?
Well,
as a New York Times report describes a Las Vegas meeting where Uber employees drank, gambled, and used cocaine. Oh, a manager man. Who groped female employees during that trip was terminated within 12 hours, according to the Times. So I'm going to suggest the folks at Uber, if you're doing rideshare, punch the lift button. Here is an interesting story. Couple earns Mile High Club membership in full view of Ryanair cabin. It appears as though a couple took off from the Manchester airport in England, and they decided to join the Mile High Club on the airplane in the cabin. All I can say about this is that if you go to travelguysradio.com, there is a link to this. And, of course, because people cell phones.
Yes. Yeah.
if you would like to see it, travelguysradio.com Mile High Club is what you're looking for.
The question begs to be asked. Okay, here it is.
Okay.
Besides in the cabin, where else would you be? What are you going to go into to get two people in the crowd into a lavatory?
The traditional place is the lavatory the Mile High Club. Tom, you'll have to, during the break here, you just click on the spot here and it will show you. You can't see anything too awfully suggestive, but you have to understand something. A lady was in the middle seat, the guy's on the window. There's somebody seated in the aisle seat while they are bringing home the bacon, so to speak, over there on the window.
Okay.
Let's see here. Maryland and the District of Columbia have sued the president over his hotel business. They claim that his hotels are competing unfairly with hotels in which the state has investments, particularly in the state of Maryland. That's kind of an interesting sidebar. Airline passenger complaints jumped 70% in April. That, of course, was the month when the gentleman was dragged off the United Airlines flight. According to Reuters, the U.S. Department of Transportation revealed the number of complaints against airlines climbed to 1,900 during April. Perhaps another reason behind passenger frustration is that the airlines canceled 1.6% of scheduled domestic flights during the month. The weather was horrible in April. That's about twice the normal cancellation rate. So it could be that some of that complaints has started to some of those complaints have started to filter into the system, but some of them may be weather related. At Death Valley National Park, they are doing a lot to upgrade the visitor experience. Death Valley is, of course, Scotty's Castle is closed for a couple of years, and the vendor in the park is taking advantage of this opportunity where there is fewer people coming to upgrade the iconic Furnace Creek Inn and Furnace Creek Ranch. They're both getting an update. So in a couple of years, when you go to Death Valley, you'll be able to stay in beautiful, upgraded accommodations. Another article I ran across this week talked about whether or not travel insurance covers you during a terrorist attack. And that's something we've talked about on the air here a couple of times. But I asked Gwen Duncan, our travel agent friend, to take a look at that. And she's going to come back and talk to us about it in a couple of weeks and give us a real breakdown of when your travel insurance and what it takes for it to cover you during a terrorist attack. And finally, we promised you the Summer of Love is coming right here to Rancho Cordova, July the 3rd, a pyrotechnic flashback 50 years ago in San Francisco. It's a great show with music and fireworks, 9:45, July the 3rd at Hagen Park in Rancho Cordova. There is a $2 admission charge. Don't miss it. Summer of Love, Rancho Cordova, July the 3rd. We close the travel news today with a great story. WestJet, which is a Canadian airline that would be similar to our Southwest, has surprised a father. And we have the tape on TravelGuysRadio.com, so you can look at this without giving it all away. 13-year-old son diagnosed with leukemia. They live in Newfoundland. The son had to go to Toronto to get some treatment. And WestJet, the airline, for Father's Day, pulled off one of the more incredible surprises, and I'll just tell you, it includes more than just the man's family. So if you really want a great Father's Day story, warning, take a hanky with you first, but go to TravelGuysRadio.com and click on WestJet's incredible Father's Day surprise, and you will get the best travel Father's Day story that you have ever seen. And that's your travel news for today.
And we are the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom. Once again, follow along with everything on the radio program today at TravelGuysRadio.com as we celebrate 50 years, the Summer of Love in San Francisco, and we take a little trip over to the coast to, well, as Mark always puts it, where hippies go to die, to Santa Cruz. Going to check out the Dream Inn. That's next here on the Travel Guys. The Travel Guys, Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations on the radio every Sunday from 3 to 4 o'clock. By the way, you can follow along with everything we talk about here on the radio in most cases at TravelGuysRadio.com. Well, here we are. It's the Summer of Love 2017, isn't it, Mark?
It is. You know, I would have been 12 years old in 1967, so I think I'm still kind of on the cusp. I just remember the tie-dye shirts and all the smoke in the air and how all of the adults seem to be sort of freaking out all around us, Tom. You know, you probably remember some of that.
Oh,
with the tattoos and all the things we have today, I can only imagine what the parents in the 60s must have thought.
Well, you know, 1967, I was out of high school. I'm just a teeny older than you, Mark, and it was an interesting time. The music was different. Every generation tries to define itself being a little different than their parents. I think the generation of the 60s, took it a few steps further.
You told me one of your road trips that you took just out of high school was to Santa Cruz.
In 1965, and, with my high school buddy. That was kind of the ultimate destination when you were a young guy, was to get together with your friends and not necessarily Vegas, because we weren't old enough to really go there, but was to Santa Cruz, which leads us to our special guest for today.
It absolutely does. Dan Smart is joining us. Dan is with the Dream Inn in Santa Cruz. It is I think, Dan, when you say the Dream Inn is, and the boardwalk is probably Santa Cruz's number one landmark.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate being on your show today. And to answer your question, definitely. The Municipal Wharf, Dream Inn, and the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk are some of the most iconic locations and attractions here in Santa Cruz.
The Dream Inn, Dan, has a tie to the 60s because that's when it was born. Tell us a little bit about the property and its history.
Yeah, of course. Well, and that's one of my favorite things about working here at the Dream Inn is we are by far the most iconic property, if not landmark, here in the city. Construction started back in 1963 to build this hotel right here on Cowles Beach. And we opened in the summer of 1965 with a 65-room hotel with four levels. And from there, we were the first and still the only hotel on the beach here in the city of Santa Cruz.
Amazing.
And from there, it just grew in popularity. And in the early 70s, we built a tower building, which now consists of 100 rooms and a 10-story high building, which as of today is still the highest building in Santa Cruz. So a lot of good, rich history here at the Dream Inn.
But still, in terms of size of the property and stuff like that, I mean, even with the addition at 165 rooms, that's not a particularly large hotel or, you know, a large property. The Dream Inn has had a number of lives, Dan, some of them better than others through the years. But she's looking really good right now.
Oh, yeah. No, we're excited. And as you said, we're 165 rooms, so it's still within that boutique category underlying hotels. And we just took on an $8 to $9 million renovation here at the property. It was all guest rooms, lobby, pool deck, all public areas. So a nice facelift and full renovation that was much needed over the past 9 years.
A couple of weeks ago, Steve LaRosa joined us on the program, and we talked about your place and had some pictures on our website, which we have again, showing that all the rooms face the ocean. And I'm guessing when you look at that picture, you see the high rise on the left, the part to the right there.
Yeah.
That must be the original area of the Dream Inn. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. You see, we call like the high rise and the low rise. So the low rise portion with the A-frame buildings kind of in the middle, that was the original 65-room hotel back in the 60s. And then, as you said as well, we're 100% ocean view. So it's one of my favorite aspects of the hotel with all of our clients and guests that come down. There's not a bad room in the house.
Dan, you told me a little bit of a story here before we got on the air about somebody who has an old reservation card from the 60s when the room rate was a little different than it is now. Tell me that story.
Yeah, of course, and it was so exciting. So as we mentioned before, we opened our doors in the mid-60s time frame, and so we've had so many people that have come and stayed with us literally for 50 years plus with their families and growing up just knowing this hotel year over year. And I got a letter in the mail literally about 2 months ago with an old reservation card. So those old rack cards, if you guys remember those, when you actually had to fill out your name and address right throughout the lobby and imprint your credit card, you know, as you checked in. Mm-hmm. And they hand you an actual, you know, key to go get into your room. So we got a card in the mail from 1969 with a room rate of $23. And we just thought it was so much fun that he mailed us that. We're always looking for that neat historical, you know, information or just materials or collateral from the hotel. And the gentleman's name was Greg, and I just was so appreciative that he mailed it over to us. So I gave him a call and just talked to him about how long he's been coming to the hotel. He actually had his first stay here in the hotel. He's got to be around 72, 73 when he was around 13 years old. So he's been coming to visit us for a very long time. And with that being said, we actually invited him back. He's coming later this month, staying with us on a Sunday evening, and he's going to pay just $23 to visit us again.
That's great. That's a great
however,
story.
However, he does have to pay the current taxes and transient occupancy, right? So that might be a little bit more than $23.
Yeah. Do you have resort fees, Dan?
Not necessarily. We do just charge for parking. So parking here down by the beach can get pretty crowded, so we like to make sure we have a nice lot open for our guests, but we do charge $25 for self or valet parking on property.
Dan, with the 50-year celebration of the Summer of Love in San Francisco and Santa Cruz clearly being a part of all of that, are there any special activities, events, or anything planned for the Santa Cruz area, or for that matter, at the Dream Inn?
Yeah, so we do, and this is the whole Summer of Love, so what we've done here on property, we've really bulked up all of our programming that includes anything outside on the beach from, nightly food and beverage offerings on our pool deck, music 3 to 4 days a week in our Jack O'Neill Lounge, which we haven't had in the past. And there's also going to be a lot of events taking place here in Santa Cruz in general, being where the Dream Inn is located right next to the Municipal Wharf and the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk. you're going to have lots of activities going on, from concerts on the beach every Friday night and fireworks coming up in the early fall timeframe.
We're talking with Dan Smart. Dan is the director of sales and marketing at the Dream Inn, which is absolutely a Santa Cruz landmark. Dan, before we let you go here, let's get down to the nuts and bolts here. On this program, we try to make folks smarter travelers. So, I mean, certainly summertime's a lovely time to come to Santa Cruz, and everybody and their uncle will be there, and the room rates will reflect that. So if we were going to tell our listeners when to come to the Dream Inn, when they could get the best rates, and when might be that little wrinkle, what would we tell them?
Oh, good question. I'm so glad you asked. And I have the secret, everybody, and this is it. So as you both mentioned, the busy time, like think of Hawaii. You know, we're going to be busy when school is out. So when those kiddos get out of school, usually mid-June, they're out all summer long, and they go back usually mid-August, right? So that's when I'm going to be the most busy, when my room rates are the highest, my occupancies are the highest. The secret to come and stay at the Dream Inn, even if you want to come on a weekend, is going to be probably the first 2 weeks of June or the last 2 weeks of August, because you're still going to get that beautiful weather we have to offer, and you're going to get a much better value and rate coming in during that time frame because school's back in session. And my other favorite secret is the entire month of May, avoiding Memorial Day. Beautiful time to be down here. It's kind of that switch month between spring break, when a lot of families are off for their, you know, the holidays with Easter, and then going into summertime. So that's a not a very busy travel time unless it's Memorial Day. It's a great time to come and visit us.
Outstanding. Thank you, Dan, for that. Thanks for joining us on the Travel Guys today. If you folks are, any of our listeners are headed to the Santa Cruz area, I'm sure you already know about the Dream Inn. But if you're new to California, it is the iconic place to stay. And as Dan is telling us, with recent renovations and stuff, you're going to find a classic property in really great condition. So the Dream Inn in Santa Cruz, we really give it our highest recommendation. Sports Leisure Vacation stays there on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. Including, we hope to be back there this September. Thank you, Dan, for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you guys as well. And any of you that want to come visit us, look us up at dreaminsantacruz.com. Thank you for having me, guys.
If you're going to San Francisco.
Hello, everyone. You've got the Travel Guys on your radio, Mark and Tom, and with us, Steve LaRosa. It's Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. A little psychedelic 60s type of music to bring us back. Again, we are featuring the summer of 67, the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love.
And all kinds of stuff going on in San Francisco this summer. Special exhibit at the DeYoung Museum. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. Before we get into this, Tom and Steve, I looked up in Wikipedia for the official definition of the Summer of Love. And this, and I think they do a really good job. This is what it says. The Summer of Love was a social phenomenon that occurred during the summer of 1967, when as many as 100,000 people, mostly young people sporting hippie fashions of dress and behavior, converged in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury. Is that a pretty good description, you guys think?
It's, I'd say so.
Yeah. I mean, if you were going to pick it up in a sentence, and of course, there's going to be more than a few people who are listening to the radio right now who are going to say, 1967, I wasn't around then, so we are going, if you weren't on the planet in 1967, we are going to educate you, and Tom, and Steve, and to a lesser extent, Mark, because you guys have just a couple of years on me, so I was 12 years old in 1967. Mm-hmm. So you guys, though, were already raising hell and stuff like that. You were a more active part of the summer of 67, were you not, Tom?
Yes, I was. I'll go into a few stories about Tom and the 60s in a bit, but I wanted to kind of start the segment off by talking with Steve. Steve, you and I worked together at KCRA Radio and television, rather, and radio in the 70s, primarily. That was kind of our heyday. And for those that don't know Steve's reputation, he was heavily involved with Channel 3 and a program called Weeknight, and did a lot of really unique features and had the opportunity to interview one or two people that were a big part of the Summer of Love. Steve, tell us a couple of stories. Who did you have a moment with?
Well, you know, actually,
one of the musicians from that was part of the whole San Francisco sound was responsible for launching my career in television.
Really?
Yeah, there was a. I was trying to figure out how to get into the newsroom, and we had a public service show called De Colores. And I went down there, and she said, "Well, why don't you do a story for De Colores?" And I said, "Oh, okay. I think I'll do a story on Carlos Santana."
Good choice.
And I went down to the radio station where Tom worked, and the guy from Columbia Records happened to be there, and he said, "Are you kidding me? He won't even say hello to me on the street." So I chased this guy all over San Francisco. We kept hearing about this kid who was showing up at his church, his wife's restaurant, and finally he's consented to the interview. So that was a big thrill for me, because that whole San Francisco sound with the Jefferson Airplane, the Quicksilver Messenger Service, and Santana, and Creedence to a certain extent, and who else, Tom?
Creedence Clearwater Revival, we're talking about.
Yeah.
Here. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Moby Grape. I think you mentioned the Jefferson Airplane. You know, the Fillmore, which was, you know, the place to go in the Summer of Love, had a lot of blues artists. There was Paul Butterfield
Blues
Band.
The Fillmore was a concert hall.
It was. It was
those who don't.
It was Bill Graham's concert hall, in fact. It was called.
Fillmore West.
Yeah, Fillmore West. And you would have a Big Mama Mae Thornton. John Mayall Blues Band, of course, The Doors played there. Jim Morrison, I mean, you name it, they played there.
But it launched so many different San Francisco groups. And Graham, well, you remember Tom. Graham was such a great promoter. One thing you could always count on at a Bill Graham show is, if the show started at 8 o'clock, it started at 8 o'clock, right on the money. Mm-hmm. And you remember going in there and with the apple barrel and the posters and...
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Fillmore was unique in that not only did you go there and get an opportunity to experience the music, and there were other places in the city as well. There was...
Avalon.
The Avalon Ballroom. There, over by Fisherman's Wharf, it was the Longshoreman's Hall. But the Fillmore had, not only did it have the bands, it had the light shows. And the light shows were truly indicative of that, of the psychedelic era. They had areas where they would let people paint with fluorescent paints on the floor, and then they had black lights kind of everywhere. And then on the walls, they had a variety of psychedelic blobs that were created with a combination of overhead projectors and slide projectors and movies. And so it was an event. It was a combination of music and light show all together.
We are talking about the Summer of Love, 1967. This is Mark Hoffman of the Travel Guys, Tom Romano, and Steve LaRosa in studio with us. And if you are interested in going to San Francisco, to the Hate, obviously, it's still alive and well. But if you go to the Young Museum in San Francisco, they are doing a Summer of Love experience, if you will, all summer. It opened in April. It goes until August the 20th. And every day you can go. They have all kinds of rock posters, photographs, some of the stuff that you guys are talking about, interactive music and light shows, costumes, textiles, avant-garde films. It's a celebration of the adventurous and colorful counterculture that blossomed in the years in San Francisco in the 60s. So, DeYoung Museum, if you're interested, and go to travelguysradio.com. We will have not only a link to the museum, but also a link to some of the other activities that are going on in San Francisco this summer. Did you guys ever hang out much in the Hate in the 60s?
Steve, we were talking before we went on the air. I understand you had a couple of visits. Why don't you go first?
Yeah, you know, we lived in Sacramento, so you'd go down there occasionally. And I remember we went on a bus trip one time, and it was kind of embarrassing because we were going down Haight Street, and all these, it was at the very beginning of the whole thing, and these guys were pointing and laughing and waving, and this one long-haired kid on the sidewalk started jumping up and down like he was a chimpanzee in the zoo. And I thought it was a great statement about us. But I can remember going down there and going to the poster shops, and I got my button.
You're wearing, I was going to say, Steve is wearing a button. Tell us the significance of that.
What does it say here?
W.C. Fields is alive and drunk in Oakland.
And tell us the significance for those that don't know about the button thing.
Oh yeah. Well, they'd have poster shops and button shops and, you know, love beads and the whole thing all over. And, you know, the patchouli oil and that whole thing. You know, it's interesting because...
Excuse me. What was that you just said? Patchouli oil?
Patchouli oil. That patchouli oil was like a cologne that was used to cover up the smell of marijuana.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Very popular.
Nearly as legal then as it perhaps is 50 years later.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know about you, Steve, but in my opinion, I would have rather just smell the odor of the pot on somebody than the patchouli oil. It was just one of those kind of an incense type of a smell that...
It was awful.
Yeah, I never really...
It was rank.
Never bought into it.
You know,
I'm sorry if one of our listeners out there is still wearing it. I apologize, but quit.
I think they said that, I read somewhere, that 100,000 kids from all over the country and all over the world came into San Francisco that summer. And as a result, they were... the rents in the Haight were very affordable in those days. But right now, like a one-bedroom apartment in the Haight will cost you $3,000. These kids, a lot of times, were living on the street. And that was the beginning of the free clinics and the diggers who would go out and gather food for these kids that, you know, just came to town.
Well, it was a big time for music, right? This is where the Grateful Dead came out of, and Jefferson Airplane / Starship came from the, and you're already talking about Santana, Creedence Clearwater Revival. I mean, not all of these bands were formed in 1967, but all of them had an impact certainly around that time.
Mark and Tom and Steve, the Travel Guys, we're celebrating the Summer of Love, and it's gonna last all summer. Look, we've got more stories and more stuff to talk about. Keep it here. We are the Travel Guys. We'll be right back. Happy Father's Day. It's the Travel Guys, Mark and Tom, with special guest Steve LaRosa, and we're talking the Summer of Love, 1967, and what it means to us.
If you're old enough that you remember the Summer of Love because you were a part of it, or you lived through it, this little discussion is for you. Or if you are someone who is not old enough to remember the Summer of Love, it was a very special and unique time in San Francisco. I'm sure that most of the adults on the planet thought for sure the world was ending. Kids were smoking weed and wearing strange shirts and growing their hair long and partying into the night and all things that hadn't happened before. But now, as we turn forward 50 years, and I'm sitting here in the studio with two guys who were a part of that, so at least some people have turned out okay.
A little worse for the wear, but
if you want to go to San Francisco, we talked about the DeYoung Museum. You can go there. They have an exhibition that's open every day until August the 20th. There are also walking tours in San Francisco, that Flower Power walking tours through the Haight and the like. If you go to travelguysradio.com, you can find a list of the links to all of this stuff. If you want the Summer of Love to come alive for you, the summer from 1967 in San Francisco this summer, there are lots of ways to do that. And you guys were talking during the break there about the Fillmore and the like. What did it cost to go to a concert in 1967?
Wow, that's a great question. You know, I think it was probably somewhere in the vicinity of about $5 a ticket, which at that time seemed a little pricey. One of the things about the late 60s and the Summer of Love and Sacramento and other valley towns, I mean, San Francisco, even though it's really close, you know, culturally, it was way ahead of the valley, if you will. And growing up in Modesto...
Probably still, some people would argue, still is.
Probably so, you know, and that's... particularly back then, because your only connection to San Francisco was maybe a couple of TV stations you could pick up on your rotor antenna on the top of your house, you know, that you got at Sears and Roebuck, that went click, 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 as it rotated around. But we didn't have, you know, the social media or anything like that. So your connection was what you read in the newspaper, what you saw on TV, and what you found at the music store. So down in Modesto, and Sacramento was maybe a little bit, you know, not quite as far behind. But when I played in a band in the 60s, we used to drive to San Francisco, and we would, like Steve, we would hit the button store. and check out, we'd go early, you know, we'd get some buttons, and then we'd swing through all of the clothing stores that had all of the paisley and psychedelic clothing, and we would pick up clothes that we would turn into band uniforms when we got home. Wasn't anything we would wear to school, but it was definitely something we would wear in the band, because we were emulating what we were seeing in San Francisco and on stage. So we were bringing the San Francisco culture back to Modesto. And I want you to know, and I'm sure the same thing happened here in Sacramento, the kids really weren't ready for it. When you would be doing a Grateful Dead song where right in the middle of it, you would play a really, really like a 10-minute lead where you would just make it up as you go. And the kids would, they didn't know how to act. And we eventually created our own light show, similar to what you saw at the Fillmore. And we would bring that to the gigs as well. And in fact, it was kind of interesting. We would play high school dances, you know, an after game dance or a weekend dance or whatever it was. And we would be playing our psychedelic music in our psychedelic clothes that we bought in the Summer of Love out of San Francisco with our light show and all. And all of a sudden, the lights in the gymnasium would go on. And the teachers would walk over to us on stage and they would say, look, you're making our children act strangely. Whatever you're doing, stop it. You know, because it was different. It wasn't just, you know, Last Train to Clarksville, you know. It was a different genre of music. It was that psychedelic thing. And a lot of kids and a lot of parents, they had never seen anything like that. Now, had they followed us to a concert in San Francisco, they would have known exactly what we were doing. So we were kind of ahead of our time, but only 70 miles away from it.
And I'm guessing in Sacramento, Tower Records would have been a huge spot for, because Russ Solomon had founded Tower Records in 1960, so by 67, it's Tower Records is pretty much in full swing. And Steve,
well, I one thing I remember is at the beginning of Summer of Love, of course, Sgt. Pepper's came out, and there's actually video on YouTube you can look up where George Harrison came to Golden. Well, he walked through Haight-Ashbury, ended up in Golden Gate Park with his guitar, surrounded by a bunch of hippies, and he was, I hate even to use the word hippies, but a bunch of long-haired kids, and he was strumming his guitar, and he made a visit to the Haight because he wanted to see it for himself. But Sgt. Pepper's was at the beginning of that whole deal. And if you even go back even further, you know, there are some scholars that say the Beat Generation, which if you go down to North Beach, you know, City Lights Bookstore or Vesuvio.
The Hungry Eye.
Yeah, all those places. The Beat Generation begat the free speech movement, begat, you know, the protest movement, the Summer of Love, the whole thing. And it was a very hopeful experience. The Summer of Love, I mean, it only lasted.
Well, it scared the hell out of a lot of people who were not in their teens or early 20s, I'm sure. But that societal changes like that have become a pretty common thing over the last century, half century. That was maybe the first time that something that radical had happened. I'm kind of remembering back, and it seems like that most adults at that time really did think the world was coming to an end. I mean, what are kids doing with this? And where is it all going and stuff like that? But as we look back on it now, it looks like that we did okay.
It was very sweet. I remember Bill Graham, who promoted all those concerts at the Fillmore. I remember him talking about how sweet and wholesome it was. He told this one anecdote where a guy would go across the dance floor and do this sweeping bow and ask some girl to dance, and they'd go out and dance, and then they would have this exchange at the end and go their merry way. And it was It's too bad it only lasted like a year or two tops.
Well, keep in mind, too, the late 60s, the Summer of Love, you know, we also had the Vietnam War.
Yep.
And we had protests.
In 68, you had the big protests of the Democratic National Convention. So.
Which all kind of fell into that whole realm. And, women's liberation started. And it really was a changing time. And I find it interesting that, you know, a lot of people point towards marijuana and the use of, you know, the evil weed as playing a major role in what was going on. And here we are 50 years later, right? And what did we do? We legalized the use of marijuana for recreational purposes just this year. And here we are 50 years later.
Sometimes the wheels turn slowly. If you go to San Francisco Travel, well, if you go to TravelGuysRadio.com, we'll have all these links to fun things in San Francisco that you can do. But the CVB has come up with on their website, they have a plan your Summer of Love trip. They have Summer of Love music venues. Where are they now? They will take you on a Grateful Dead trip through San Francisco. They will take you on a walking tour from 1967 from the Beatnik era in San Francisco, mm-hmm. through North Beach.
Just as smart, Steve was referencing.
Right, Janis Joplin, San Francisco, Jimi Hendrix inspired San Francisco trip. So they have done some really creative things on their website. TravelGuysRadio.com, you'll find a link to all of this stuff that's going on in the Summer of Love. And I strongly suggest to you this summer, take a trip to San Francisco. And even if you don't get involved in any of this stuff, take the train to San Francisco, take an Uber over to the Haight, have lunch, walk around for an hour, and just throw yourself back 50 years. Before we have 30 seconds, guys, before we wrap this up, any final thoughts about the Summer of Love?
If you're going to San Francisco, wear some flowers in your hair.
Once again, happy Father's Day, and thanks for allowing us to share some memories with you today. Remember, you can find everything we talked about here on the Travel Guys at TravelGuysRadio.com. Special programming note, next week on the Travel News, Mark will have a special update on what changes the president has made that will affect travel to Cuba. Mark?
Well, thank you, Tom and Steve, for sharing all of your Summer of Love memories. I hope that just a few people maybe were driving around town and got a little bit inspired by something that you guys said, or it caused a memory to bubble up for one of them. We will be back next week here on the Travel Guys. Remember to dance like nobody's watching.
Peace, everyone.
For those who come to say